Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
A lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's all of the above.
That's not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
So, today is all about the cervix. So the cervix is in Why Screening Saves Lives. It's so important for us to do this episode because cervical screening genuinely does save lives. It's a really efficient screening test and we need to make sure that people have it. There's so many people that don't have it because of so many stories that they hear, and we really want to give like a rounded story of what it is to have a smear and why you need to have one so that people can get in, get the smears booked, and come on, let's prevent cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm. So cervical screening and smears, same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Totally.
I feel like
they're
two words that like I'm not always sure if they're the same.
I know. I think it's because in past times we used to call it kind of a pap smear. That's kind of the process of getting the cells.
Okay.
So, but it is a cervical screening program. So okay. You book in to have your smear as part of the cervical screening program, basically.
Yeah.
That's it. Same difference. We will use the words interchangeably. I will imagine. Yeah.
I think people understand smear. Smear is probably a bit more widely used than cervical screening.
Yeah, it sounds a bit less medical almost.
Yeah.
Just a smear.
Yeah.
I wish people thought that. I like that.
It's a good little saying.
It is just a smear. I like that.
We should coin that. So if we go right back,
mm-hmm.
Let's start at the anatomy. What is the smear doing? What's it using? Is it something to do with the cervix?
No, all to do with the cervix.
Yeah, this is a good question because I feel like loads of people actually don't understand what a smear is.
Yeah.
Well, should we go through what a cervix is?
Yes.
Because the smear is coming from the cervix.
Perfect.
So if you don't have a cervix, you don't need a smear.
Yeah.
So we'll go with that. So what is a cervix? So the cervix is also called the neck of the womb. So it's like a tube, a fibromuscular tube. So it's made of like fibrous tissue and muscular tissue. It's at the bottom of the uterus and at the top of the vagina. It's usually like 3-4 centimetres long. It's like a little tube with a channel down the middle.
So it changes in proportions throughout your life. Just a fun fact as an aside.
So drop it in.
When you're premenopausal, your cervix is small in comparison to your womb. When you're postmenopausal, your cervix seems quite long in comparison to the womb because the womb is tiddly tiny.
Yeah. So all things are relative.
Yeah.
the womb gets smaller when there's no hormones making it do its thing every month. So.
But the cervix stays the same size.
Is the cervix the same size or does that... And it just looks so longer because the womb's smaller.
In proportion. So when you're postmenopausal, the cervix will look longer. Like when someone's had a hysterectomy in the postmenopausal, often you get the cervix and the uterus out and they're like the same kind of size, half and half each.
Yeah.
But then when you're premenopausal, your womb is bigger than your cervix. Okay. But having said that, when you're actually looking, so part of a smear, you have a speculum examination, which is the plastic tube that goes into your vagina. And then at the end of the plastic tube, the person who's examining you can see your cervix. When you are premenopausal, your cervix probably looks a little bit bigger through the speculum than when you're postmenopausal. So that just confuses things a little bit.
So she changes.
Yeah, the main thing is it does change over your like reproductive life.
Yeah, like lots of things do with regard to women's health and anatomy.
And it also changes after you've had a baby. So if you've had a vaginal delivery, then obviously your cervix has opened up, let a baby out and closed again. And so it does look slightly different.
Yeah, I feel from it's got to open quite a bit to let a baby out. Yeah. So it makes sense that it would change.
But other things with the anatomy that are important to know are the cells. So the outside of the cervix is also called the ectocervix. The bit that you can see when you're looking in a vagina when you put a speculum in. That's called the ectocervix. That's got
you say that like we do that daily, and I'm like, that is just not my lifestyle.
Maybe one day you might retrain, you never know. Be inspired.
She's like, no, thank you.
But that's when someone's doing a speculum on you, that's what they can see, the outside of the cervix, and that's called the ectocervix. And those cells are called squamous cells. So they're flat, they're kind of shiny. The same kind of cells that line your mouth. Like that kind of,
yeah, straight to my cheeks.
Whereas then on the inside, that channel that we mentioned down the middle, they have different kinds of cells. They have columnar cells. They produce mucus. So they're slightly different. And you've got this little junction that's like where the inside cells meet the outside cells. It's called the squamous columnar junction. That junction moves throughout life. So when you go through puberty, when you're on the contraceptive pill or any hormones, and also during pregnancy, that can kind of come out a little bit further. And we actually haven't, we weren't necessarily going to talk about this, but it's a really common thing that people have, a cervical ectropion.
Yeah. So when like your inside cells come on the outside and they're a bit like, oh, we're on the outside.
We're not normally out here.
Used to be on the outside.
You can see with
the speculum.
You can see
it. Yeah. Oh. So it looks like a little red kind of pinky red patch on the cervix in the middle. And the problem with that is that they can bleed, so you might have bleeding like after sex, you might just have random bleeding in between your periods, and you might worry, go and see a doctor, and then they can be like, oh, you've got ectropion.
Is it painful?
No.
Okay.
It's
really common.
Very, very common, and especially in pregnancy. Totally altered by hormones, but it's genuinely when those cells that are in the inside come a little bit on the outside under the influence of hormones, and you could imagine that something that shouldn't be on the outside is kind of like, oh. And so therefore he's not used to the, like, the abrasiveness of the outside in a sense.
Like, so normally like well protected on the inside of the channel, and then suddenly they're exposed to like the pH of the vagina.
They penis.
Can, all sorts of tampons, menstrual cups. So they can bleed, basically.
Yeah,
And they often just go away on their own, don't need any treatment.
Okay.
So that junction is the junction that we would want to take a smear from.
So that's where you're aiming for.
That Alison mentioned, because it's where things can go wrong, where the cells, well, the two cell types change, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we ready to go back to smears themselves? What happens there? We're aiming for that junction, but what's going on inside?
Great question, and I think people get very overwhelmed with when they need to go for a smear. So when you are 24 years old and 6 months, you get a nice little invitation to go for your first smear, because smears start at the age of 25 in the UK. And when you go for your smear, I just want people to be kind of understanding that it's not a massive thing.
It's just and a smear.
Yeah, it's just a smear. You're totally right. And when you said earlier on about, I don't know, your lives are so weird because you look at cervixes all day. Well, in a sense, though, that's what the nurse or doctor or whoever in the GP practice that you see,
actually
it's just,
does.
They just want to get that you in and out, and it's just another tick box of their kind of appointments that they'll have throughout the day. It's nothing out of the ordinary for them. And I know it's out of the ordinary for people, and we've had this discussion numerous times about how it is random to go into somewhere and take all your bottom half out, and you feel really
especially
exposed.
If it's the first time that as well.
But it's, you've got to remember that it's a medical situation, and it's a means to an end. It is just a smear, and it means that you're trying to prevent something that could be really dangerous and could potentially kill you in the end. So have the smears.
Have the 5 minutes of potential awkward.
What I think could be useful is if we could do like a step-by-step what is going to happen. So like from door to door.
Yeah, so you get into the surgery room. A lot of times the practice nurses do the smears, but obviously GPs can do them as well. They're routinely done in GPs because it's a national screening program, so we don't do them ad hoc in hospital anymore because it's not kind of within the screening program. So most smears, unless you've had a problem and you've come to hospital, will be in a GP setting, done by somebody in the GP surgery. So you would go in and they would ask you a bit about your history first, kind of, have you ever had any abnormal smears? They'll have a look back at the system. What contraception are you on? Have you had any problems with your periods? Have you had any problems bleeding in between your periods, bleeding after intercourse, just so that you can get a feel of, and they're doing a little bit of an MOT while you're there. Just kind of, are we up to date with everything?
Love that,
well, because
cervix MOT.
Yeah.
Cervix
MOT. Well, if you're a young person that never goes to see the doctors, we have had this quick conversation recently about the fact that I have been ousted from mine. then, you know, you don't see a medical practitioner. So it's a good opportunity for us to get a little bit of information from you. Let's make sure that we're up to date with everything. So they'll ask you a bit of history before they start with the procedure. They will explain the procedure to you. So the practitioner will say, so this is what will happen. We'd like you to get on this bed here. There's a little cover that you can put over you. You need to take all your clothes down from the waist down, pop them on the chair that will be available next to them. You can keep your socks on.
I feel like that would be my big decision. I'd be like, did I get my toes out? Is that too far?
No, you can keep your socks. We don't need to see
you. You don't want to see my toes. I don't think you do.
And they would ask you to get on the bed, pop your little cover over the top, clothes on the chair next to you, and then they would ask you to kind of bend your legs up and relax them out to the side. And I know we say relax all the time, and as you say it and when it comes out of your mouth, I always say, and if you could relax as much as possible, which I understand is easier said than done, but the more relaxed you are, which I totally understand easier said than done, the easier this is.
Yeah.
Because when you're tense, it's really difficult to examine people. Yeah. Like, really difficult. Because you can imagine if you tense now, if you just tense your bottom up, you can feel that everything. But you can feel that it would be difficult to kind of try and examine it because you're so like,
my whole self moved up when I did that.
Yeah. Well, it's like if you were going to have sex and you were really tense and you tensed your bum and you didn't want to have sex, like, that's the kind of same.
Yeah.
The same discomfort you're going to feel if you really tense and then someone's trying to put a speculum in.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's often the person who's doing it will really try and put you at ease.
Yeah, they'll like
to try and remind you to relax as much as you can.
Hairdresser
but it is easier.
Yeah, hairdresser
job.
That's why I like doing procedures when people are awake, because you can have a little chat with people, find out what's going on in their life, where they get their eyelashes done, all the huge.
Distraction technique.
Yeah.
All good.
So the bed goes up in the world so that the practitioner doesn't break the back. You have a light source. Sometimes people wear like a little head torch, or some people will have a light that's behind them.
Like the dent.
Because it's a dark colour, you can't see what's in there.
Like, that might seem more intimidating than it is as well.
Do you know what? It's really, they make it really easy using a little head torch.
Yeah.
I like it.
Because otherwise, if the light's behind you and then your head is here, you're like, oh, I'll have to angle the light here. And maybe
and especially, so they'll routinely ask if you would like a chaperone as well. When I last had my smear, I said I don't need a chaperone. It was a female nurse, and I was very happy to have my smear. But you know, when you're kind of like always thinking, God, I hope she can get the light in the right place, because sometimes you need that extra pair of hands to like just be guided and
so
get everything.
So head torch makes everything
easier.
A chaperone's usually there for like two reasons. They can help like move the light and help the nurse or the doctor doing the smear, but also there to kind of just be an extra pair of eyes so that everyone's happy that nothing
it's all
nothing
above
untoward went during the examination. So it's more to protect the practice. And it's kind of a routine thing. Like in hospital, we always have to have a chaperone when we examine someone. So it's not really, it's not because they just want to get as many people in the room as possible while you're having a smear. It's like a routine thing to kind of just protect the practitioner.
And I guess that's another person to help like distract you, like another hairdresser to talk to.
And they don't usually see anything. They're usually just there like
on the other side of
the light.
Although, as we said, it genuinely, it's a big thing for you, but it's not a big for any, big thing not anybody else in that room.
No.
She's probably just thinking about what she's having for tea and how many more appointments she's got to get through in the day. So they would use a speculum to visualise your cervix. So a speculum, we've said before, you can either have a metal or a plastic speculum, and they put lots of jelly on this because then it's lubricated. The speculum is pushed in, opened, so that we can visualise the cervix. Sometimes we can't visualise the cervix straight away, and they might ask you to kind of change position slightly. So they might ask you to sit on your fists and your bottom to kind of tilt
your pelvis.
Or kind of they might ask you to do some like deep breathing to try and get things a little bit more relaxed.
Or coughing sometimes, because that can like increase the pressure. And then usually like if your cervix is just sort of like hiding, it might pop into view. So those kind of things,
there's
a little
So she's mobile.
Definitely. So there's lots of little techniques that people might use to get that cervix into view. And then genuinely, when the cervix is in view, all they do is either hold the speculum or lock the speculum so it's there, and twist a little brush in on that junction that we were talking about. Twist. It's done.
The little brush. Is it like a little swab?
No, it doesn't look like a swab. It looks like a paintbrush.
Yeah, it's like a plastic
genuinely.
Yeah.
A plastic paintbrush, I would say.
And so on the outside of your cervix, you've got a little dimple in the middle, which is where that channel kind of starts. Mm-hmm. So the brush has got a little kind of like point to it. The pointy bit goes into the dimple, twizzle it round, and then you catch all the cells that are there, and then you put the brush into a little pot, and then the pot will go off.
So you twizzle the brush in the pot, and then close it up, send that off.
Okay, so it's pretty quick, generally.
And then, the speculum's removed, and then
you're all down.
Don't jump off the bed when it's really high. Don't want any injuries.
Sometimes I've heard people worry that having a speculum, they're like, am I going to wet myself?
Oh.
Is that anything that's ever...
So people do worry about that, and people worry that when they're asked to cough that they're going to wee everywhere, or they're going to pass wind, or they're going to... Yeah. And honestly, you worry about that a lot more than anybody else ever does. People are always like, oh, I haven't got my legs shaved.
Oh, yeah, that's a really common
one.
Are
you just like,
genuinely...
I don't mind.
Neither have I.
Let's go with this.
Try and get it into perspective that this is a means to an end. You are going to be in and out of here in 10 minutes. Yeah. And you could then perhaps reward yourself with something nice after.
It could be saving your life.
You'd much rather know that you've got an abnormal smear than not have a smear for years and years and then have cervical cancer.
Yeah.
So
that's what we're testing for.
That's exactly why. It's a screening test to try and detect early changes of cells before they become cervical cancer.
Okay.
So that's a really effective screening program.
It's such a good screening test because there are so many pre-stages before cervical cancer.
And this is something that there isn't a lot of for other cancers.
No, that's why I was just going to say, actually, when we discussed before about ovarian cancer and that people like screening for ovarian cancer, but there's no pre-ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. So you can't test for something that you could get rid of before you get an ovarian cancer, whereas cervical screening is absolutely perfect because there are so many stages before you would get to a cancer. Mm-hmm. So that's why people should have this.
We should also say at the end of the smear as well. So after you've had, you put your knickers and your trousers back on.
I'm dressed again.
Good. You then shouldn't feel any pain, any problems for the rest of the day. You should, if you want to, be able to just carry on, go back to work, or, you know, maybe take yourself off for a little hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Well done, me.
Self-care.
But it shouldn't cause you any, like, cramping afterwards. You might get a little bit of, like, bleeding or a little bit of spotting afterwards, but that's normal.
When these cells go off, what is it they're looking for?
So they're looking, first of all, for an infection called HPV, so a group of viruses.
What does this stand for?
So it stands for human papillomavirus.
Got it.
There are many types of them. There's, like, multiple different strains. Mm-hmm. So you might have, like, HPV and then a number. It's a different type of the virus. But there's lots and lots of them, and they... Well, everyone will get a HPV infection at some point in their life. They often don't cause any symptoms.
Okay.
So it means can come and go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Comes and goes. And basically, it tends to sort of like colonize, like infect the skin, the mouth, the vagina, and the anus as well.
Okay.
And some strains, so there's like hundreds of strains.
Yeah, there's
Some strains will cause certain things, like strain 6 and 11 are quite commonly associated with genital warts. And then type 16 and 18 are kind of high risk for cervical cancer.
Is this the same as, like, herpes, then?
No.
But in the transient sense.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
like, transient, the way it sort of comes back. And
Yeah.
So warts just make
like
me
like a cold sore.
Yeah.
So cold sore's a virus. That's the herpes simplex virus. That will come and go over your lifetime.
Yeah. Okay.
You do get symptoms with that. HPV is a little bit more inconspicuous. You don't really actually get any symptoms.
Okay.
You don't know you've got it.
But transient is completely correct.
Okay. Yeah, your body will clear it.
I just
and
heard
then
two
it
H's
might...
and went, must be the
Would
same.
You?
Yeah.
So if you didn't have... a HPV infection at the time of the smear, would it show up or not?
No. So that's what they look for first.
Okay.
So the other thing about HPV is that it isn't, just to be really clear, it's not just sexually transmitted. You can get it from just like skin-to-skin contact.
Okay.
So it's not classed as an STI, which some people worry about, and we'll come on to that a bit later on with the questions. But yeah, the smear, when they receive it in the lab, the first thing they do is check for HPV. If there is no HPV, then they don't do anything else.
Literally put it in the
bin. Are they checking for all the HPVs or just the ones that are
They
associated?
Test for, like, a lot of the HPVs.
Okay.
I don't
That's
know if
good.
It's 100% of all of them, but all of the ones that are associated with cervical cancer, basically. Because if there is no HPV, then the chance of there being any abnormal cells that would become cancer is teeny, 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 tiny. So it's a really good thing. If you don't have HPV, great. You're very unlikely to get any abnormal cells and develop
cervical
cancer.
HPV triage. So, like, it comes in... have, you know, when you're doing like a flow diagram yeah. for anything that you come mm-hmm. in, you've had your smear, you've come in, test for HPV. If it goes yes, then we'll discuss that. But if it goes no, genuinely nothing else.
You're clear till the next one.
Nothing else to go. Yeah.
Whereas if it's positive, that's when they would look at the cells that they got from that little brush mm-hmm. and look at the cells and see if they look like normal cells, in which case, great. You've got normal cells, you might have HPV, but that HPV will probably be cleared and you'll come back in a year to see if it's gone.
Okay.
But if there's any abnormal cells, then you'd have further investigations, which we'll talk about.
Okay. Yeah, so if it's kind of, we're going this, we'll go on to this now.
Yeah,
and then
makes sense.
Everything is kind of flowing on the flow diagram. So if you come down the yes side, you have got HPV. So if you've gone down the no side, let's finish that off. Mm. So if you've got down the no side,
finish what we started.
You then will be recalled for your smear in 3 years.
Oh yeah, and we
three
didn't years, say okay, how often years. People have smears, yeah, which is probably really key.
Yeah.
So when you have a smear, you're invited for a smear from age 24 and 6 months.
Have you got an invite?
Yeah.
Have I been yet?
Invited?
No, but I'm trying to book it. I'm just, GP's always making
it
tricky.
Are you excited?
Buzzing now. And it's only going to be 5 minutes.
Yeah, you'll be on it.
And that you can have a hot chocolate after.
Yeah. I'm not coming back to work.
Not provided by the GP. I love the bit where we say invited though.
Do you know when you're like birthday party invitation, I'm like, ooh.
Come along for your exciting simple procedure.
It does feel really weird to be invited for something, doesn't it?
Yeah. But it is.
It's nice though.
Yeah, you're invited. Mm. You know, you've been chosen. You've been selected based on your age.
You are the chosen one.
But yeah, age 25 to 64, that's the age range that you will be invited for a smear. But the time, the number of years is different. So 25 to 49 every 3 years.
In England.
In England. In Scotland and Wales, it's every 5.
Okay.
And then
depends if you
after
stay here.
Oh, no. 50 to 64, it's every 5 in England. But in Scotland and Wales, from
always.
25 to 64, it's every 5 years.
How come 25? Is it more common after the age of 25?
It's a good question. It's because we know it's due to HPV. Most cervical cancers are due to HPV. Most people wouldn't have HPV and then have enough time passed to actually develop any abnormalities until you're 25.
Okay.
So if you do smears earlier than that, you're just, most of them are going to be normal, but as with any test, you might get some false results, and that's going to cause a lot of stress.
Yeah.
So over time, they've decided on 25 is like the best age to start.
It used to be younger.
It is the best age.
To be younger, and they did loads and loads of, because cervical screening's been around for so long, the research on this is absolutely fantastic. So they've done lots and lots of work about how often you need to have smears and also when you need to start smears, because there was a massive like push by somebody saying that we needed to have them younger. Mm-hmm. And you're always going to have, really unfortunately, someone that's going to have a cervical cancer when they're 21. Mm. But on the whole, it genuinely doesn't happen. And for the amount of false positives that you would get in that cohort of people, so that group of people between 21 and 25, or whenever you decided to start doing them, it's just not worth it. Because you can cause problems with people having to come back, and they might end up with surgeries that they don't need. And there is a lot of kind of sequelae, so like ongoing things from
great
abnormal
speech.
Sequelae,
so like the consequences of ongoing smears. So it was kind of decided that it would be 25, but all kind of research-driven. And then Wales and Scotland looked into it further, and they felt that 5 years is needed.
Enough. And that's quite recent, I think. It's in the last 5 years or so that they've gone from 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. So is it everybody who has a cervix that needs to have one?
Yes. So that's a really good point as well. So if you're registered female sex by your GP, you'll be invited. So if you're registered, not female, but you are, say, for example, a trans man who still has a cervix, you need to make sure that you tell your GP that you still need smears.
Okay.
It's all to do with, because it's a national screening programme, it's your registered sex and your GP will trigger an invite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there are a certain group of people that might be missed by that.
Mm-hmm. So non-binary, like if you've, I don't know, different GPs have got different systems of how they register people. So if you have a cervix,
you need a smear.
You should have a smear.
And that counts for people as well that haven't had sex, because I think there's quite a lot of myths around that you don't need to have a smear if you've never had sex. Mm-hmm. And as Alison said before, that's not true, because there are a certain subsets of cervical cancers that can be caused not by HPV. So,
and even as you said, HPV is not always sexually transmitted.
No, it usually is. So if you're not sexually active, you're very unlikely to have a HPV infection in your cervix. But it could happen, and there are other, that not all cervical cancers are caused by HPV. There's a small number that are caused by non-HPV, so you should still have a smear.
So how does a HPV infection that might be absolutely fine progress to, in some cases, being a cancer?
Yeah. So we started our little flow diagram.
Yeah, where are we going down the other side?
So we've gone with, you've not got HPV, you've been discharged to your normal, either 3 or 5 yearly smear. If you have got HPV, then they test for the cells that we've removed when we did the smear. So if you've got HPV, but there are no changes in these cells, so all the cells look very normal, then you will be invited back for another smear in a year.
So
that's quicker.
So you get to join the
annual party.
Yeah, you've got an annual party.
Extra.
And the thinking behind that is that most people will clear, so you know, eradicate the HPV within a year. Yeah. So if you go back, most people will then not have HPV.
Okay. So if someone gets that result, it's not always something to worry about.
No. But I think it's that's a really common thing that people do worry about. Oh, I've got HPV. A, what is it? Yeah. Is it an STI? Has my partner cheated on me?
Yeah. And I feel then what does it
mean? I feel like my mind's just spiraling and I've not even had a result yet.
Right, yeah. So I've got to break up with my partner because they've been cheating.
Yeah, people do think that, and it's not true at all. So as, like we said before, HPV is something that you will get. It doesn't mean your partner's cheated on you. You don't have any symptoms. You might have had a type of HPV kind of lying dormant, and then one smear, it pops its head up and you have a positive result, but it's not like a typical, it's not an STI, and it doesn't present like things like chlamydia and gonorrhea. It's different to that.
So you've gone down so HPV positive but cells are normal, you will now get invited back in a year's time. HPV positive. Oh my gosh,
all the letters.
HPV positive and you've got abnormal cells, then you will get a further invite. And you get to come to see a colposcopy clinic.
It's giving VIP.
Ooh, colposcopy.
Yeah, not everybody gets to come to this.
What is colposcopy? It's a weird word.
So colposcopy is a long word, but basically it means, so we use something called a colposcope to look closely at the cervix. And
like
the colposcope, it's like a magnifying glass with a light on it. So you would, if you were going to come to the colposcopy clinic, you'll see either a doctor or a nurse.
You look down it that way and then it looks forward.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it doesn't go inside you. You have your speculum, and then once your cervix is in view, the person will look down the colposcope, which is then looking at your cervix.
Is it kind of like, can you remember them things in parks where it's like a tube and it's got a mirror and you can see the person on the other side?
It's like an upside down periscope.
It is. Exactly like that.
Okay, got it. Imagining that.
But the benefit of that is that you can see much better than you can with your eyes. Magnified version of the cervix. So you can have a look and see if there are any abnormal areas.
Okay.
And they can also use little solutions to put on your cervix and see again if there's any abnormal areas there. And then maybe take a biopsy, which would be, you would be given local anaesthetic. Take a small little biopsy, sometimes more than one, of any areas that look abnormal. And then they would be looked at by someone in the lab to see if there's any abnormal tissue there.
The local anaesthetic, would that be like an injection?
Yeah.
So it's very much like if you've ever had an injection at the dentist. So
into
like
your mouth.
Yeah, those tiny, skinny needles.
And, yeah. Okay. And they work very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they work super quick.
I had 4 teeth taken out.
They do. Yeah, and they take a while to wear off.
Yeah. You're drinking and it's spilling out the other side.
Yeah. So you asked how HPV causes cervical cancer. So first of all, it doesn't always.
Yeah, yeah.
So the majority of the people that have a HPV infection don't get cervical cancer. But in a small number of people, the HPV will cause changes to the cells and the cervix. And this is called cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, right? CIN is easy.
Okay.
CIN
more
much
abbreviations
easier.
Though.
Yeah. Yeah, we say that as if we've not got mixed up on the abbreviations.
I know, already.
CIN, HPV. But CIN is just abnormalities in the cells of the outside of the cervix. There's three different types, 1, 2, and 3, sort of like mild, moderate, severe, which is basically just how abnormal... how many abnormal cells there are, or like how deep the abnormal cells are in the cervix, in the outside of the cervix.
Yeah.
So in some people with HPV, they will go on to get CIN, and then some people with CIN will go on to get cervical cancer.
Okay.
But it's not like 100% of everyone in those three groups.
Okay, there's like a nice drop.
It's like loads of people have HPV, small number get CIN, and then of the people with CIN, a small number, if it was not treated, would go on to get
cervical
cancer.
Okay, so you can treat that.
Yeah, that's why going back, and I know we're trying to hammer this situation home, but that's why the screening program is so good. Because there's so many steps before you get to a cervical cancer.
Exactly.
So we can do things at all the different stages. If you had CIN1, then we wouldn't do anything. It would be, again, you'd get invited back in a year to come back and see the colposcopist and have a look, see what's happening, take more biopsies if needed.
Yeah.
If you had more advanced changes, so CIN2 or 3, then obviously the colposcopy person would speak to you about these thoroughly, and we would discuss the best options of care for you. A lot of times it would involve a LETS.
So that's
I've just nodded, and I'm actually like,
when you said I'm hearing LILETS, like the tampon.
It's like an acronym, as everything is in medicine. It's a very long name for a procedure.
What are the letters?
So it's a large loop excision of the transformation zone.
LLETS.
LLETZ.
Zone.
So if you think back to when we were talking about that kind of area where the cells on the inside of the cervix meet the ones on the outside.
Mm-hmm. So if you make a fist, that's like looks like the end of your cervix.
Oh. Yeah.
So outside, inside cells.
Okay.
And so when we want to do a LETS, we're just going to use LETS now because that word is well.
You don't want to say it every time.
Yeah, no way. When you're going to do a LETS, you want to remove that end bit of the cervix, which sounds a lot more drastic than it is, because you're just removing like millimeters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. A little slice.
It's not a scrape, but it's imagining
it's like a slice of a Swiss roll.
Yeah. Like a really thin slice of the end of the Swiss roll.
Like one that my mum would do, and you'd be like, "Mum, come on,
more than a sliver, please."
That I say I want when really want it, because
exactly. So that's one treatment for CIN 2 or 3. And I think it's really, really important to say that CIN is not cancer.
No.
Yeah.
It's a precursor to cancer.
Okay.
CIN 1, actually, a lot of the time, so that's the mild form, doesn't need any treatment, and you will just be monitored again.
Yeah.
And if it persists, you might need some treatment, but again, most of the time it'll just go back to normal.
Yeah.
So it could go away on its own.
And it will do a lot of the time.
Basically, LILETS.
LILETS.
It's basically like removing it.
Yeah. So it, as the name suggests, if you say the whole name, a large loop excision, it's a loop.
It's an excision.
So it's like a wire loop.
Yeah. Oh, and you like tighten it, and then it just goes whoosh.
No, you just kind of go to the top and go down.
Oh,
okay. So
I feel like I'm going to YouTube this later.
Yeah.
Like a potato peeler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of. But a loop.
Okay.
A looped
potato peeler.
Yeah.
A potato peeler.
Or like one of them blackhead removers.
I don't have one of those.
No. I know what you mean. It is a loop,
and you just like...
We'll move on, sorry.
Okay, maybe.
Just going back for a second with the biopsy.
Yeah.
What do you do in the biopsy? Is that like a cut as well?
So that goes back to, so you've had your like positive HPV, and on the cells that they've looked at, there are some abnormal ones. And then you come to colposcopy, you use the nice periscope, look at the cervix, and any areas that look abnormal, we'll take a little teeny tiny, like 1 to 2 millimetre biopsy. So it's usually like a little metal device that just pinches a bit of skin off the end of the cervix.
Okay, just a little like tweezers.
Yeah,
just
but you'll have local.
Local
anaesthetic.
So you won't feel that.
But then when those results come back, if those results show something like CIN2 or CIN3, that's when you would need treatment, which is one of the things is a LETS.
With the LETS, do you get local anaesthetic for that as well?
Yes. And sometimes because the colposcopists are amazing at their job and do this all the time, they wouldn't do biopsies, because they would look, when they've put the different stains on the end of your cervix and they've noted that some abnormalities, they would discuss and say, I think we should do a LETS straight away.
Yeah,
okay.
So
you
might skip.
It might be that you would just come and have a LETS. So if you were going to a colposcopy appointment, expect lots of different things. You would always be talked through everything, But you could be going for, have a look at your cervix, have a look and put some different solutions on the end, have a biopsy, have a let's. Any of that could happen in an outpatient appointment.
And could all happen at your first appointment. Okay, so that's good. It's not like you have to go back again.
No.
With the let's, is this going to be painful afterwards? Do people find it? Because obviously I'm imagining if you did it on skin, you'd get like a scab.
Yeah, you get a similar thing. So the cervix, after you've removed just that kind of like very thin outer layer when you do this let's procedure, it will then form kind of like a scab and heal. So people often get a bit of bleeding afterwards. Sometimes discharge will be different.
It can be like watery. Or you can have kind of black it will be like burnt kind of.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it can be, you can have lots of different types of discharge. Okay. But they would discuss this with you before you came.
And you've got anaesthetic for that.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that you would need to worry about is, because you can get an infection after this, just like any procedure, we're making something raw in a sense. So if you had discharge that was smelly, if you were having ongoing bleeding, then you would need to see a medical practitioner.
And you shouldn't really be in much pain. Like you have your local anaesthetic during the procedure, and then afterwards, the most common thing that you get is a bit of funny bleeding or funny discharge. Most women don't go home in pain.
Okay.
So if you went home and then suddenly your pelvis was really painful, you feel a bit feverish, you don't feel quite right, then you should come back and see someone and see if you might have an infection.
And obviously, because it's like removing a bit of the cervix, would this have any impact on like when you're pregnant and giving birth? Or
so having one let's wouldn't have an impact. Some people need multiple treatments. So say you have a let's and then they obviously send that tissue off, and say there's still persistent abnormal cells
at the junction, so kind of we haven't got them all.
Yeah.
You might need another let's, or you might need something called a cone biopsy, which is essentially a slightly more invasive procedure to treat abnormalities in your cervix. So instead of just taking the superficial layer off, they'll take you'll have local anaesthetic or sometimes general.
I was going to say, I think mostly general.
Yeah, they'll take a bigger wedge of tissue away to try and capture all of that abnormality to prevent any cervical cancer developing. If you have a cone biopsy, then because they're taking away quite a big chunk of your cervix, when you get pregnant, there's a slight increased risk of miscarriage and also going into preterm labour. But we know that. So what happens is, if you have a cone biopsy, you'd be told, when you get pregnant, tell your GP, we'll do an early scan to measure your cervix, and we'll warn you about things to look out for and how to try and prevent it.
Could you still deliver?
Oh, yeah, totally. Same if you've had multiple lets as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many lets can people have?
Lots. Well, you could have as just many said as your cervix is really very long.
Yeah.
But it'll get to a point where they'll say, right, we're we need to have a think about
it. Is it working? Should be something different. Yeah.
But yeah, it can cause preterm labour. We know about that. You would be under a preterm labour clinic.
Yeah.
So there's things in place because
you'd be looked after.
Yeah. We do know that this is a thing.
But also it's a really, like, obviously it sounds quite scary. Oh, I'm gonna have to have a big chunk of my cervix removed, but it is a really good treatment, and if you want to go on and get pregnant, then that is kind of the best route for you because you don't want to remove your uterus, you don't want to remove the whole cervix, and it can be a really effective treatment for like abnormalities like CAN 2 and 3,
and
so it's worth it.
The flip side of that can happen. You know, you were saying about, can you deliver a normal vaginal delivery if you've had a let's? The other thing can happen. So when you've had a let's, sometimes scar tissue can form. So the cervix actually doesn't open very efficiently. So we've talked about that it might cause preterm labour, but actually it can cause you not be able to have a vaginal delivery just because of scar tissue. Because I've seen that a couple of times before where we're like
healing over it.
Well, not healing over it. It just is like rigid. So the cervix usually under hormonal control when you're going into labour softens and shortens, opens. But if something's like rigid because it's scar tissue, then it won't soften, shorten, open.
It can happen. So, most people are fine. Most people go on to have a vaginal delivery, but it can be a bit of a problem sometimes.
Yeah. And if you did have a cancer when they did your let's or cone, or if they found that earlier on, then you would have more definitive treatment. You would see an oncology doctor that would be obviously an expert in this, and there are various different options. Some people have something called a trachelectomy, where you have your cervix removed.
Just the cervix?
Yeah, okay. So if you want to retain your fertility, so you've not had children yet and you want to be able to get pregnant in the future, then that's something that people can have. Some people have radiotherapy straight away, some people have a hysterectomy and have everything removed straight away. It totally depends how big the cervical cancer is.
Okay.
And there's very straightforward cutoffs as to what operations you can have or what treatments you would have depending on what it is. But the oncologist would speak to you about
we'll
this.
We'll probably cover another episode on cervical cancer.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot to go into.
There's a lot to go into and it would be a good episode to cover, I think.
Definitely. Can you still get pregnant and have a baby without a cervix?
Yes.
Okay.
But after people have had a trachelectomy, so have the cervix removed, a lot of times they would put a suture in, so to kind of close where the cervix
like
has come from.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of then have a further discussion about how you're going to get pregnant. Sometimes
would you not be able to give birth vaginally?
Well, again, you would be able to give birth. it depends how you have a suture put in. So sometimes people would have an abdominal suture. If you have an abdominal suture, which is called a TAC,
trans-abdominal cerclage,
then you wouldn't give birth vaginally. You would have a cesarean section.
Okay. But yeah, I think they're really interesting and difficult things. If you're someone who's got cervical cancer and you want to get pregnant and you might be able to have just your cervix removed, it's a really complex discussion that you would have with multiple doctors and oncologists about what the risks and benefits are for you.
Yeah.
But I think that is something that we should cover in the cervical cancer episode.
Yeah,
perfect. Yeah.
So I remember at school, right, we've talked a lot about HPV. Yeah. I remember at school, maybe being like 12 or 13, and being given an injection for it.
Jabs.
And it was just the girls for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be to prevent...
Yeah, so so for a long time, there wasn't a HPV vaccine. Yeah.
When I was at school.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day.
And then I remember when I was in year 10, it came in for girls in year 8.
Oh.
So this was a while ago. A little while ago. And the first kind of HPV vaccine was just for a couple of strains of HPV that are known to be high risk for cervical cancer. Mm. And it was just given to girls. Mm-hmm. But then over time, it's progressed. And actually now it's given to boys and girls, which is great.
I think it was boys and girls when I got it.
Oh, yeah. She's so young.
So now it's something called Gardasil 9, which covers 9 types of HPV. And 2 of them are the types that cause warts, 6 and 11. And then also the rest are high-risk HPV kind of types that it'll cover. And the theory is that, like, you should hopefully, if you treat young boys and girls, you're going to prevent a lot of the high-risk HPVs circulating, and you'll prevent a lot of the cervical cancer that could develop if those infections persisted.
So basically, everyone should get the HPV vaccine.
Everybody should get it, because it will, like, it would have the chance to kind of eradicate most cervical cancers.
And not just cervical cancer, a lot of anal cancer, throat cancer as well.
Yeah.
So even if, you know, you're
a
boy...
So it's got perks for the boys too.
Yeah, definitely. So perks for the boys, because, you know, not all of them will have sex with women. Some of them will be gay, and then it helps prevent throat cancer and anal cancer. But also for boys, they don't have any screening for those HPV infections.
Oh, true.
So we do. We have a cervical screening program, which is great. But the boys don't, and it's an asymptomatic thing that you'll have. Like, you won't know you've got HPV. So if you're protected against it from an early age, brilliant.
When?
Why would you not?
They try and catch them. They try and catch people before they've had sex, because the best chance of it working is before you've had sex. Because as soon as you have sex, there's the potential to have HPV.
Yeah. And I feel if people come into schools anyway to do the jobs, might as well do it to.
Totally. Boys and girls both should have it, and there was some pushback at first, because people said that by having the vaccine, it was making it. It's the whole thing about, you know, when you put people on the pill for heavy periods, and they're like, well, actually, it now just
now
means
they're
going to
have sex.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I don't even remember knowing that it was anything to do with that. I just remember it being, oh, we're all having jabs today, and no one will punch each other's arms.
I would also argue if they're going to have sex, they're going to have sex. Giving them a vaccine isn't going to be like, right, now I'm going to go and have sex.
They
might
as well be
and protect them against potential things that can go wrong later on.
And I think people were saying that boys don't need it because it's the girls that have HPV and cervical cancer, and you're just like, but it's everybody needs it.
Everybody's into this.
So really important for people to have HPV vaccine, because it genuinely has, well, it has revolutionised the cervical cancer screening, what will happen in the future.
Do you think if everybody had the HPV vaccine, it would almost eradicate?
It would almost eradicate. Which is
get
why it's
HPV
such...
vaccine.
Well, and also if you have your HPV vaccine plus take part in cervical screening, have your smears, because a lot of the problem, I think, is that people don't come to their smears because they're worried about what it will be like. They don't want to, it doesn't sound very nice, but if you did that, and everyone came to the cervical screening as well, you'd have like hardly any cervical cancers because you'd pick them all up earlier and treat them before they get the chance to develop, which would be amazing.
It's dropped again as cervical screening. So there's like peaks and troughs as to when people go for screening. So there was the Jade Goody effect, which unfortunately, obviously, Jade Goody passed away from a cervical cancer, but she was quite a well-known person at the time. And when that happened, people were like, I better go and have a smear. But people forget, like, you're not chatting about like Jade Goody every day of the week.
Getting the car remoted.
People
forget, speaking from experience.
Yeah, maybe every time you go for your car remoted, just be like, do I also need my cervix remoted? No, okay, I've got another few years.
And I think as well, speaking about experiences that are not terrifying is great. I mean, I've not had one yet, but I feel not afraid after our conversation.
Fine. Well, you've had a coil fitted and you've discussed this openly, so I feel like we can mention
watch my video.
but that means that you've had a speculum and as soon as you've had the speculum with a smear, literally speculum, smear takes seconds and you're done. Yeah. So you'll be like, oh, this was nothing.
Did you even do it?
So I think it also is nice, you know, if you say, right, that's the day I'm going to get my smear and then I am going to do something nice for myself afterwards. Yeah. It's like a little positive reinforcement.
I'll come meet you after, we'll go get hot chocolate.
I like that my smear is becoming a thing for you.
She's like, so what day should I get off?
I'll be off work as well.
Sympathy, yeah. I'll look after you.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever you need to do to get this smear done is fine.
Yeah, I think, I hope that people have understood from this that it is just a smear.
Just
and that it can save your life. Mm-hmm. Like, just go and have a smear.
Yeah. Maybe we need to change the name of this episode. Just a smear.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Well, yeah, we could.
Okay, we'll have a think about it.
So that's kind of everything we wanted to discuss, really. The main messages are what we've just drilled in. Please go and get a smear because it will save your life, potentially. And it's not as scary as you might have thought it was before you knew about it.
No. I think we just need to quickly say that although you've had smears, if you have got any symptoms that you're worried about, don't be like, oh, well, I had my smear, so I'm fine. So if you've got bleeding after sex, in between your periods, or after menopause, then you definitely need to see a medical practitioner, okay?
Yeah.
And then, as we said, that if you've had the procedure and you've got discharge that you're worried about, again, see a medical practitioner. That's just because infections are easy to pick up and treat. We don't want people to get unwell with them. So see somebody if you're worried about symptoms. Don't rely on a smear. Back to the analogy of if your car's making a sound, it doesn't matter if you had the MOT last week or 6 months ago. You can't ignore it.
I'm terrible for that. It's been a light on my car for about a year. But it's still running fine.
But she went for her smear.
I did go for my smear, time for some myths and questions.
So the first one I think we have touched on, but there's a big myth that you only need to have a smear if you're sexually active and you don't need one if you're not having sex with men. Do you know what I mean? Like heterosexual sex, that is.
Yeah, so definitely not true. If you're not having sex, you should still have a smear. Yeah. Reason for that is that not all cervical cancers are caused by HPV. Mm-hmm. So you might be not having sex, but still a small number of people can be at risk of getting cervical cancer. Yeah. So you should still go.
It's really tiny, but everybody should have a smear.
Yeah.
And if you're having sex with other girls, you should still have a smear. HPV can be passed, as we said, from touch, from toys, from various different things. So you're not immune to HPV just because you're not having kind of heterosexual intercourse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another one, you don't need a smear test if you have no symptoms.
Oh, no. Not yeah. So so HPV gives you no symptoms at all. Mm-hmm. And so same for CIN 1, 2 and 3. And even some cervical cancers, you might not have any symptoms. So no. Big myth. You should go and get a smear regardless of whether you have symptoms or not.
Yeah. The next one was a bit of a mental TikTok that we saw.
Yeah.
We saw this and we were just sat there like, one, please tell me that's not true, but also... Please don't say that.
Oh.
Smear tests apparently cause cancer by interrupting that junction, moving cells about, upsetting them, making them unhappy.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Oh, God.
I watched this because you sent it.
Yeah.
It's just, it really just blows my mind that people can say this. There was a lot of things in that video.
It was a long video.
Loads of comments.
I know.
People coming
people
saying,
are like, I'll never go
this
for my smear ever again. And you're just like, are you
it's
joking
like, please,
me?
No.
Like, so disappointing when that kind of thing is widespread online.
There was so
and
many
she had
things.
Such a big follower.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. There were so many things in it, though, that were just absolute nonsense. Because she said about the, it's cancer causing in the brush that we do the smear with.
Oh yeah, that,
you
yeah.
wouldn't be invited for something if the government didn't want something out of you. What?
That's like the opposite of the NHS.
Yeah, and that disrupting those cells causes cervical cancer. Now, as I said previously, there is so much amazing research into cervical screening and cervical cancers, and this is just absolute rubbish.
This is what we're here for, though, to tell you what's true and what's not.
Please don't listen to that.
So all of that lies.
Complete lies.
Good.
Crap.
just to get that really clear.
And also, I mean, you know, if you do have some abnormal cells in your cervix and then you have your smear is going to detect them so you can get treatment if you need it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to disrupt them and cause cancer. If you don't get your smear, then there's a chance that it might become cancer. So actually the complete opposite
it's
of what that person is saying is true.
You tell them.
Well, I was very angry after I read it.
I did
a video to Stitch.
There you go. She's got the link.
Did a job with the kids there. And then we couldn't stitch it because you've got to say that your video can be stitched when you put it on.
She knew.
I think some people genuinely put things out that they know are false to get a response, to get more followers.
Yeah. No, people do everything for the clout.
That's so dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because then she obviously doesn't want anyone to... She doesn't want any backlash, so she doesn't allow her video to be stitched.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a red flag for me.
Yeah.
Ooh. If you stand by what you say, then let people have a response
their opinions
to it.
On it. Yeah. No, definitely.
Agree.
Another, that smear tests are really painful for everybody.
Yeah, not true. And there are people that will be uncomfortable having a smear because there's people that are uncomfortable having sex. So there's... And there's also going to be people that are going to be very anxious. They're going to be postmenopausal and have vaginal dryness. There's going to be people that have got vaginismus. So there's lots of conditions that potentially would make a smear uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And there's no point me sat here saying, smears are fine for everybody.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, go and speak to someone. Mm-hmm. It might be that if you had it in a different setting, if you came to hospital to see us, we have a difficult smear clinic, if you had some sessions with a psychosexual counsellor, if you there's lots of things that we could put in place to try and assist you. And people sometimes when they're postmenopausal will have a course of estrogen, and it will make their vaginal dryness much better, and when they come then for a procedure it's not uncomfortable.
And on that as well, because obviously there's a lot of postmenopausal people that will be invited for smears, the estrogen that you give is just vaginal estrogen, so it's not really classed as HRT.
So it's not,
if anyone can't take estrogen as HRT, you can take some vaginal estrogen as a short course to help you make your smear less uncomfortable.
So
there's loads that can be done.
I think you can't just like rule it out because you say, oh, I've had one bad experience.
Yeah.
I think we need to take a little breath and think, how can we make this better?
Yeah.
Ways around it.
Yeah, totally.
So I think now we'll move on to questions. So the first one was, if my first smear test is totally normal, all good, do I really need to go back the next time I'm invited?
Yes.
good, I thought so, but I'll just drill it home.
As we said before about HPV is transient.
Yes.
So you can have it at different times of your life. You need to make sure that you're tested. And you can still be with the same partner. And we need to ensure that nothing has happened, nothing's progressed, so that we can rule out cancer.
Yeah.
Another question, do I need a smear test once I've been through the menopause?
Yes.
Yeah, until age 64.
Mm-hmm. Why does it stop at 64?
Well,
let me just know that. It started at 25. Mm.
For some people, it doesn't stop.
Okay.
So if your last smear is abnormal, then you would carry on.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be informed as to when you would need to come back again.
Okay.
But if all your smears have been normal by the age of 64, then we don't need to do any further smears.
Okay. Now this one I think will definitely be one that like a lot of people think, because it adds to that like anxiety when you're going to get the smear.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go from a period?
good. It's a really common question as well. You can have a smear.
If that's the only day you can do it, still go.
Yeah, still go. Because with the smear, what you're doing is you're taking a brush of cells that are on the cervix. If there's lots and lots of bleeding, then it can kind of dilute the sample a bit and make it a bit less easy to look at.
A bit harder to see.
But if you remember, the first thing they're going to do is screen for HPV. And if the HPV is negative, they'll never look at those cells anyway. So
they could still get the HPV despite it being more diluted.
Yeah. Okay. So I think generally it's best, if you can go on a different day, try and book it in when you will be not on your period. Mm-hmm. But if that's the only day you can do, don't cancel it. I would still go.
Okay.
Do you need a smear test if you're pregnant or between pregnancies?
Between pregnancies, yes. If you're pregnant, you don't tend to have a smear. I think the reason for that is that, do you get a lot of false different positives?
Or, yeah. So, but some people, while they're pregnant, will have a smear because if they've had abnormal cells and they're kind of in that process of kind of ensuring that things have normalised, then they will be people that will need to see the colposcopist. It might be that they don't need smears and they don't need any excisions or anything, but they go and see the colposcopist.
Yeah.
But they are very much the minority and they would know because somebody would speak to them exactly about what they want to do. If you're pregnant and you get your request through to go and your invite through to go and have your smear, then have it when you've had your baby.
Okay.
We say invite as well. There's also a drop-in at the minute that they're trying to bring about around our area.
The bus?
Living Well bus, I've heard of.
So that's
so you can just go.
Yeah, I think that's for people that have kind of missed smears.
So if you know that it's your time.
It's your time, or you've missed one, then they're trying to make it a little bit more accessible.
Yeah, they're in handy places like supermarket car parks.
That's really handy.
And they're doing like out of hour vibes as well, aren't they? So then like it fits with different people's work.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time it's you want to go and get your smear, but it's hard to get an appointment, or maybe the appointments
time
aren't when
work.
You're free.
Yeah,
so if you could just drop in, great.
Yeah.
Love that.
Quick vibes.
Drop in for a quick smear.
The next one we have is maybe inspired by what we talked about when we did the coil episode, because we're asking sort of, can I, should I, is it a bad thing to take a painkiller beforehand? Like, is it worth it? Is it not?
I'd say you can if you want to.
Yeah.
You don't need to.
Yeah.
It isn't like having a coil inserted, which you know you will get discomfort and potentially quite a bit of pain for. It's more the kind of embarrassment that some people feel about going for a speculum exam.
Yeah.
And a painkiller might not actually make that any better, but if it makes you feel better, there's
no
harm.
Go for it.
Go for it.
Gosh.
Yeah.
If I've had my HPV vaccine, do I still need a smear test?
Yes.
Yeah. You do.
And then I feel like this is maybe quite a big question, but if someone's had a hysterectomy, do they still need that smear?
This is a really good question.
And I feel like this is a nice one to end on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Head home.
If you have a cervix, you need a smear.
Okay.
So I think it's really important, and we've said this numerous times, that people should know exactly what procedure they are and aren't having, exactly what they've signed up for, exactly what they want. And if you have had a full hysterectomy, which means that you've had your cervix removed, if your smears were normal before, then you would not need another smear.
Okay.
If you've had a subtotal hysterectomy, then your cervix is left.
Okay.
Then you need a smear.
Okay, then you've still got one.
When you said if everything was normal before, if you had abnormal cells before and you'd had a full hysterectomy, how would you get a smear with no cervix?
They'd do something called a vault smear.
Okay.
So where your cervix was and it's removed, the top of your vagina then becomes what we call medically a vault. So it's sort of like it's always a blind ending tube, but it's just not got a cervix at the end of it. And they can take a smear from the end of the vagina, basically.
Yeah.
But you would know about that. Someone would inform you.
You'd have that chat.
Yeah.
You'd still get your invitations.
Potentially not.
Okay.
I think it would depend on the person.
But if you know that's you.
I think you would be getting invitations from colposcopy because it's a vault smear.
Yeah.
And it would probably be somebody that's had a total hysterectomy because of cervical cancer or because of CIN2-3. They've had this hysterectomy and we want to make sure that the vault is also clear.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's going to be a very small subset of people, but the oncologists are amazing
and
they would very much tell you what you need to do.
I would say as well, if you've had a hysterectomy, most people have the uterus and the cervix removed. If you've not been told, if you're not sure, then check. Yeah. Because you might need to then flag that you still need smears.
Mm-hmm. Because if you've been discharged and it says you've had a hysterectomy, I don't think the GP would maybe think that you've left with your cervix.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of just the differentiation between whether you've got your cervix or not.
And that would be in the operation notes from when you had your surgery.
And so that's a big thing to know, isn't it?
Like,
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to you.
There used to be a lot more subtotal hysterectomies because they felt that leaving the cervix meant that people had better intercourse afterwards. But actually, the research doesn't really say that anymore. So cervix is taken because they're just a form of could go wrongness.
Something there if it's not needed and it could cause problems
and
in the future.
And if they want it removed in the future, it's really difficult compared to just removing it at the time.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So a lot of times now cervix are actually
removed.
They go
removed. As
well. But it can be that they're left because of if someone's got a big fibroid uterus, you can't get to the cervix. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bleeding. There's various reasons why a cervix could be left. Just ensure when you are leaving hospital,
you know.
Am I leaving with a cervix or not? Do I need my smears or not? I mean, you should know that beforehand as well, but then there'll be a plan before and then there'll be a little, this is what actually happened, so that you know that,
But
yeah, great. I think that's everything we wanted to cover.
It is.
That was fun.
Yeah, I know. So as always, we just do a quick disclaimer at the end to say that everything that we've discussed are our own opinions, and they're not affiliated with where we work, and we you shouldn't take what we've said as medical advice personal to you.
Yeah, and we just want to say if you found this episode interesting, comforting, if you learned something new, if you're going to go and get your smear now, please leave us a review. It really helps. And remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And I know this is a little thing, but if you can and you like the episode, please give us a 5-star review because it pushes the content to as many people as possible, and we really just want to break down the barriers, bust the myths, and give everyone access to correct information.
We really want these episodes and this podcast to reach as many people as possible, so if you're up for being part of that ripple effect, then please like those hit those like buttons.
like those hit buttons. And make sure you're following us on all of our socials and engaging with our content at Between Two Ovaries.
Thank you.
Bye.